All right. Brand new sermon series. I'm kind of excited. Now, I'm going to have to probably get someone to help me with like banners and stuff, because every time I'm doing banners, it seems like my words are never big enough where people can kind of see them. I guess it's definitely not, I don't have the banner gifting. But so, new sermon series, God Promised, I Promise. We're going to be covering this through the month of December. And really my hope is to begin to look at the different promises that God has made us. And if you go through the Bible, I mean, there are just hundreds, if not thousands, of promises that God has made to us. And what we're going to learn is that each one of those promises, God keeps. You can depend on it. Matter of fact, you can literally take them to the bank. But what you'll also notice is that with each one of those promises, we have the opportunity to learn them. And then we have the opportunity and the ability to not only, you know, learn them, but use those promises, because God gives them to us. But what we can learn is that we can give those same promises back to God. But we can also take those same promises and use them in the different people that God places in our life. And that kind of makes sense, though, right? Because, I mean, when God promises something, we know we learn it, right? We learn what that promise is. We learn how to apply it in our life. And sometimes that takes some work, right? We have to change sometimes based on what God promises us. And then we see just how valuable that promise is. So what do we then want to do? Well, we want to then share that same promise with other people, because why should we keep that blessing just for ourselves? We should be able to give that promise to someone else. Now, our key scripture for the month of December, you can write this down. We'll probably start every one of our sermons with this, is 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 20. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 20. I put this in the NIRV version. I just liked how it reads. It's a familiar scripture to a number of you. It says, God has made a great many promises. They are all yes, because of what Christ has done. So through Christ, we say amen. We want God to receive glory. And that's what we're saying, is when God makes a promise, you can be sure that God's going to do his part. It is. Matter of fact, they're all yes because of what Jesus did. Matter of fact, he's proven time and time again, when he promises something, it's a yes and an amen. Not a if or a maybe. If God said it, it's going to happen. Now, we've kind of entered into the Christmas season. I think now that we've hit December, I think it's fair, right? We're now in the Christmas season, you know. And for some people, they literally look forward to it all year. How many of you are like that? We're like, you know, this is your month. You love Christmas, you know. And they immediately want to put up their decorations, right? The decorations. They want to start singing Christmas carols. I mean, I got some people literally want to start singing them in October. But I mean, usually when you hit December, it's kind of, it's fair game, right? You can start singing those. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts gets their peppermint mocha back, right? So, I mean, some people are very excited about that. And, I mean, you got the blinking lights, you know, green wreaths, candy canes, mistletoe. I mean, and really what it does is it brings back fond memories, doesn't it? And it kind of gets you hopeful, right? For just some new memories, new traditions, new things that you want in your family. I mean, some people actually look forward to snow. Believe it or not, some people do. They look forward to snow and, you know, a roaring fire, you know, or, you know, ice skating. Maybe if you're hardcore, you might even go snow angel, you know. I don't know. I've done a few. I mean, I've always had really fond memories of Christmas, I have to admit. I knew when Christmas came, I knew that I was going to have my annual trip up north to visit my grandparents on my mom's side. And we would be drinking some eggnog. We would have Christmas cookies. We had Christmas caroling. I don't know about you, but I love Christmas caroling. We used to go door to door. I mean, we did it all throughout our neighborhood. And with my mom as the choir director, I knew that I was going to be in a Christmas pageant, whether I liked it or not. I was going to have to sing. I was the only of three kids who actually could sing. So I knew there was no way around it. But I have lots of memories. And to be honest, they're good. I really do. I have a lot of good memories. But you know what I've learned? For some people, Christmas doesn't have a lot of good memories. To some people, honestly, Christmas can be kind of a dark and a lonely place. They may not have many traditions or memories that really kind of bring a smile to their face. You know, or maybe they did, but the family or friends that they used to share them with aren't here anymore. You know, or maybe they've moved on to other relationships. And when that happens, it kind of leaves you empty. Kind of feeling of, you know, you're really not wanting to celebrate Christmas. You're not really in that kind of mood. And be honest, some of us, we've lost people in our lives, and that first Christmas without them, it's hard. I mean, it doesn't mean the second or fifth or tenth or more are any easier. I mean, they're not. And sometimes we can't travel, I've learned. And family's kind of far away. And so for either Thanksgiving or Christmas, you're not around those that you really would want to be around. Others really just haven't developed close relationships. You haven't developed, you know, or some of you, even the expectations of Christmas are tough. Because for some of you, social situations, it's just not what you like to do. You kind of like to be alone. You kind of want to be by yourself. And you find kind of vacations and social situations, they can be stressful. They can actually be quite hard for a number of people. I've actually learned that, I guess you'd call it loneliness. It's kind of a hard cross to bear alone. Now, loneliness, I've kind of looked up what Webster says. Webster's dictionary calls loneliness as a feeling of separation, isolation, or distance in human relationships. Matter of fact, loneliness is marked by emotional pain, an empty feeling, and a desire to feel understood and accepted by someone. Now, I want you to understand, though, but loneliness is not the same as being alone. It's not. I mean, loneliness feels draining. It feels distracting. It actually causes you to be quite upset often. Now, there's a difference, though, because you could have planned alone time. And you know what I mean by that? You know, it's what we want. We actually look forward to times being alone. And those times can be quite peaceful, aren't they? I mean, matter of fact, to some people, it kind of stimulates your creativity. You know, you're able to kind of get away and you leave those times kind of feeling almost restored. You feel rejuvenated. But what I'm talking about, though, is when just because you feel lonely, you can feel lonely when you're crowded around with tons of people. Have you noticed that? You could literally be at a party where everyone is laughing and having fun, and you are still there feeling all alone. You feel kind of disconnected, right? Unplugged. You're just kind of isolated. It's like you want to be in, but part of you doesn't want to be in. That's a stressful feeling. Matter of fact, they actually say that there's a rising concern, and they actually call it an epidemic of loneliness in our society. And I'm intentionally using the word epidemic. I actually looked up, there was a national survey by Cigna, you know, the Cigna Insurance. They actually polled over 20,000 people in the United States. They looked at people from ages 18 and up. And you know what they found? They found that most, which means more than 50% of the people they polled, are lonely. More than 50%. Matter of fact, they actually found that the youngest generation, and they found that generation to be the loneliest generation of all the generations, which I found kind of interesting. You would think the youngest one wouldn't be that way, but actually, it's the opposite. They are. They showed that the millennials, these are just the ages from 23 to 38, they've actually surpassed Generation X and the baby boomers. They are now considered the loneliest generation that is here now. Here, let me just throw a couple statistics at you. 30% of millennials always or often feel lonely. 30%. 20% say they have no friends at all. 1 out of 5 believe they have no friends, none. 27% say they have no close friends. They have is kind of casual kind of acquaintances. 30% say they have no best friend. That's a lot. So basically almost one third of people in that age say, I don't even have a best friend. And it's interesting is those numbers are higher every generation that they follow. Matter of fact, they've also shown that the generation that's following them have even higher numbers than that generation. It's actually getting worse. It's becoming more of an epidemic throughout our society, which you feel kind of strange considering that we kind of think we're the most connected society, right? Well, finding it's not true. Matter of fact, it's interesting. Medical science has actually seen an impact that loneliness is having on people. And it's not just in our mental health, it's actually our physical health. I read that, you know, if you're experiencing loneliness, it says that your body actually begins to produce a stress hormone and it actually goes into overload. Now, that stress hormone, it actually impacts what they call your cognitive functions. I'll explain. Basically, what it means is your memory impacts your memory. It impacts your ability to focus on things. They say it actually impacts your reasoning, your ability to kind of think straight. That's what loneliness does. They say it actually impacts your immune system. The more lonely you are, the more susceptible you are of getting sick. They say it actually increases your risk for heart problems, heart disease. They've been able to find of the people who statistically are lonely based on their criteria, they say that the impact it has on their body, it's the exact same impact of being severely overweight. It has the exact same, I guess you'd say, impact on that person physically. So, but that honestly, that really shouldn't shock us because what does the Bible say about being alone? I mean, look, Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. I'll put it up behind. Genesis 2, verse 18. Then the Lord God said, it's not good that man should be alone. God knew that, right? I will make a helper fit for him. And he's not even necessarily talking about marriage. He's just talking about having relationships outside of just him and God. Even God looked at creation and said, it's not good. Basically, he's almost saying it's not good enough for you just to have a relationship with me. That's not enough. You need more than that. So here, let's look at our main text this morning. This is what we're going to be basically spending the rest of the time there. You can turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. I actually want to look at a story that to many of you is going to be very familiar. Some of you may not have heard of it, but a number of you, if you've been in children's church, you've heard this story before. And what I think you'll see is we're going to look at a man that either was either he was dealing with loneliness or he at least was at high risk for it. And what you're going to see is that this story actually shows us the different causes for loneliness. But the story also shows us what you can do to actually fight loneliness in your life. Not only in your life, but actually will show you ways that you can help people break out of loneliness in their lives as well. So, Luke chapter 19, starting in verse 1. It says, he entered Jericho, he being Jesus, right? So he entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. Now, you guys know the story, right? Now listen to me. I'm going to stop for a second. Whenever I start using familiar stories, you know what usually happens? You shut down on me because you're like, I already know this story. Pastor, you didn't need to even bring me here. Listen to me on this one. There's some stuff in here you will not know. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was. But on the count of the crowd, he could not because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. So what are the causes for loneliness? What are the causes? First cause for loneliness, number one, is rejection. Rejection. Remember, there are many things that could happen in your life that can cause you to feel rejected. But I can tell you this, there aren't many things in your life that can bring you more emotional pain, though, than rejection. Matter of fact, when you feel that someone has turned their back on you, when they really have rejected you, it can be devastating. How many of you have had that happen? Where you've literally had someone just totally throw you to the curb? Like, for example, how many of you have heard this before? We teach our kids this, right? That sticks and stones can break our bones, but names will never hurt us. We know that's a lie, right? We do. Matter of fact, rejection hurts. And it not only does it hurt us, but it causes us to what? To pull away from other people. See, when we have broken trust, not only does it destroy that relationship, but what it causes us to do to be less likely to start new relationships. Why? We're afraid. We don't want that same thing to happen in something else. Now, what we see here in the story is Zacchaeus, he wasn't just a tax collector, he was a chief. He was like the head tax collector. His job was to collect money from the people in Israel. And his job was to collect that money and give it to the Romans. Now, why? Well, because at this time, Rome had conquered Israel. They were occupied. There were Roman soldiers everywhere. So they would set up tax collectors, and their job was to go to the people, get money from them, and give it all to the Roman government. Now, unfortunately, what these tax collectors would do is they would often keep some of the money for themselves. So either they would take more than they were supposed to, or they wouldn't give all the money to the Romans. That's how they got really rich. So if you were a tax collector, you were really rich. This was like a prime job to have. But the problem was, everyone hated you. Everyone. If you were a tax collector, you might have been rich, but no one liked you. Because basically you were viewed as someone who was betraying everyone. You're, instead of protecting the people that were your own, you were seen as a traitor. You were seen as someone who was supporting a government that was oppressive, that was stealing from people. Now, I can promise you that Zacchaeus, because of the role that he was in, no one liked him. He was rejected by his people. Now, what I also find interesting, and maybe you've noticed this as well, is that some of the most well-known and rich people can be some of the loneliest. Have you noticed that? I mean, I'm telling you, rejection destroys relationships. And almost the worst thing is not only destroy that original relationship, it stops new ones from forming. Now, second cause of loneliness. Second cause is insecurity. Insecurity. Now, let's be honest. We all have areas in our life that we're insecure about, that we lack confidence in. Is that a fair statement? You know, and I can tell you for men, one of our biggest ones is our physical stature. It's how we look. It's our appearance. Look, growing up, believe it or not, I actually was on the basketball team. I was. Seriously. I was varsity. I always wanted to be bigger, taller, faster, stronger. That's all I wanted. I mean, but I'm 5'9". I was the only guy on the team who couldn't dunk. And look, it's just something is ingrained on guys. That you always want, I mean, you always feel judged based on your appearance. Now, how was Zacchaeus described in verse 3? Small in nature. I mean, how many of you guys probably remember that, you know, children's church song? Zacchaeus was a wee little man. I feel bad for Zacchaeus. I mean, that's I would be like, those were fighting words to me. I wanted 6'3". As a matter of fact, I used to lie and say I was like 5'10". Even though, you know, really, yeah, I wasn't. I mean, but I'm telling you, there's, in a perfect world, we would never feel insecure, right? We would love every single thing about ourselves. But the truth is not one of us is perfect. And now and then, we do become insecure with how we are. Now, many things lead to that insecurity, as I'm learning. You know, our insecurity usually starts by what the world says is their standard of beauty. Have you noticed that? And what we do, we try to compare ourselves to what the world says. And I hate to tell you this, social media does not help this. Have you ever seen someone post an ugly selfie of themselves? You know what they do? When they take like 300 pictures and they find that perfect one where they're, you know, or whatever, you know. I've never seen them like, you know, with like a little drool coming down here or something off center. And so what do we see? All we're ever seeing is people at their best, people perfect. And I mean, even when we look at our own relationships, we have expectations based on the society and the culture we live in of what things should look like or what things shouldn't look like. And we're always judging ourselves. We're always changing and, oh, I better lose a few. And if I could just get this certain brand of clothes. I mean, it's interesting how things don't change. I mean, when I was in high school, you had to wear Nike sneakers and acid wash jeans and a Bart Simpson t-shirt. I mean, and that was considered cool. We didn't wear socks. Because, why? Because on Miami Vice, they didn't. And so we were sockless. I mean, it was weird. Or you would wear, literally, you'd have sweatpants. You'd have these long white socks that you'd pull like all the way up, and I'd pull up my socks so the socks would show. And that somehow was cool. But see, but we did it to try to not feel insecure about ourselves. We tried to fit in. We tried to be a part of what was going on. But I'm telling you, I can guarantee you that Zacchaeus dealt with this. Just the fact that you're described as a wee little man, you're described as someone who's small in stature, where literally you can't see Jesus coming, so you actually have to climb in a tree to see if he's coming. So Zacchaeus dealt with insecurity. Third cause of loneliness, sadness. Sadness. See, when things take a turn for the worse in our lives, it has an impact not only in us, but on all of our relationships. It does. It even hurts our desire to find new ones. And look, in the story, we see Zacchaeus, he's desperate to see Jesus. But think about this. He said he couldn't see Jesus because of the crowd. You know what that means? Look, do you think everyone knew who Zacchaeus was? He was the chief tax collector. So basically, if Zacchaeus is saying, I can't see Jesus because I'm too short. Well, what does that mean? It means that no one's letting him up to the front to be able to see Jesus. Oh, you? Yeah, get back. Let's be honest. So you don't think that, you know, he quickly learned that I got no friends. I got no one who wants to be around me. As a matter of fact, my only shot is literally running ahead, finding a tree, and climbing up because no one's got my back. You don't think that he dealt with some sadness in his life? Fourth cause of loneliness is fear. See, I've learned that fear is probably Satan's most popular weapon against us. It is. Because look, when you already feel rejected, when you feel insecure, and when you're sad, I promise you, you will live a life of fear. You will. Why? Because there's little to protect your mind from all the different things that an enemy is going to lie and say to you. Doesn't matter who it is. If you're insecure, if you feel rejected, if you feel sad, you're going to believe every negative thing that comes in your mind. Everything. And Zacchaeus, look, his profession caused him to be rejected, right? Chief tax collector. His stature caused him to feel very insecure about who he is. They literally mention it in the Bible. And you don't think he felt sad? The one time that I need friends, the one time I need someone to kind of get me in so I can at least just see the guy that I want to see. And he didn't feel he could depend on anyone. He had the perfect breeding ground for fear inside of him. I can just kind of picture this little guy climbing up in a tree all alone, just hoping to get a glimpse. Too afraid to try to push through a crowd and actually get to the point where he could talk to Jesus. He didn't want to, he was like too afraid. It's like, you know, he didn't want to get close enough to touch him. Didn't want to get too close. But you know, but he was curious. He wanted to see. So that sounds sad to me. A scared little man up in a tree just hoping to get a glimpse of someone that he's heard so much about. But honestly, Zacchaeus was trapped. And I believe he's like a lot of us, where we don't have the courage or the strength to break the loneliness that we have inside our hearts. So how do we? How do we break loneliness? Well, let's continue verse 5. Let's finish the story. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried, came down, and received him joyfully. So how do we break loneliness in our life? Well, number one, we need someone to love and share our lives with. We do. We need someone that we can love and share our lives with. See, because what you'll notice here with one simple statement of love and acceptance, Jesus literally breathed life into Zacchaeus. Number one, Jesus broke his rejection by saying, your home. I will come to your level. I will go to your house. Jesus then broke his insecurity and said, you are worth spending time with him. I'm going to your home, yours. No one else's. I'm going to your home. Jesus broke his sadness by saying today, not tomorrow, not someday soon, not, we'll see if we can schedule a time. Today, I'm going to your house today. But see, Jesus then also broke his fear because he said, hurry. Hurry. No delay. No time to second guess. I don't want you to be worried if I'm going to show up to your house or not. Come down now. Matter of fact, hurry up because I'm going to your house today. See, when we have words of love spoken to us, it has the power to break loneliness in our life. It destroys everything that causes or even allows loneliness to begin to grow. Let's continue. Verse 7. And when they saw it, they all grumbled. Has he gone in to be the guest of a man who's a sinner? So how do we break loneliness? Well, number two, we need someone who understands how we feel. We need someone who understands how we feel. See, this is, again, is important why Jesus went to Zacchaeus' home. He didn't go to the marketplace. He didn't go to like a neutral site, or maybe one of his disciples or followers' home. He went to Zacchaeus' home. And he did it knowing that by doing it, he was going to take a hit. He knew that people were going to talk. He knew that, people were going to say, really, the sinner's house. But see, just by willingness, love, and acceptance, Jesus broke the power of loneliness inside of Zacchaeus' life. See, when someone takes time to understand us, to love us where we're at, and they don't just do it by words, because, people can say a lot of things, but Jesus could have. He could have spoke lots of words, but he said no. He showed it by action. He literally went to the man's house. By doing that, then we can believe it, right? Because look, anyone can say anything. But when you do it, when your actions follow your words, that means something, right? You can bank on that. But see, Jesus doesn't just say the right things. He goes to his home, like I said, just knowing, to the sinner's house again. Did it bother Jesus, do you think? I think so. Verse 8, and Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. So how do we break loneliness? Number three, we need someone who needs and wants us. We do. Do you see the power that love and understanding can have on someone? I mean, when you feel loved and understood, it actually allows you to feel wanted and needed. It does. Matter of fact, and when you feel wanted and needed, it frees you to reach out in love and understanding to someone else who needed what you needed. And we see that in Zacchaeus' life, right? Like, immediately, what happens to him? I mean, he wants to love every single person that he's ever met in his life. And even those that he hasn't met in his life, he wants to love on them. And he wants to make sure that nothing is held against him. I mean, when you're talking about someone who was going above and beyond, Zacchaeus, I mean, this is a transformation. His life is not the same. He now is loving people that he never even met. Half of what I own, I'm giving to the poor. Half. So basically, he literally splits his wealth in half. And then what he says is, if I've stolen from anyone, I'm not going to give them their money back. I'm going to give them four times their money back. This is a man who, once loneliness is broken in his life, once he learns that he's loved, he's accepted, and he's appreciated, it literally transforms him. He's just not the same guy anymore. Now, when the power of loneliness is broken in our lives, no more rejection, no more insecurity, no more sadness, and no more fear, it frees us to love other people. It allows us to understand where people are at and meet them where they're at. So, look, now, it's God promised, I promise. So now we understand loneliness. Let's look at what God has promised us in regards to loneliness. Let's look at those. Number one, God promised to go wherever I go. Right? That's Joshua 1:9. I have that on my bedroom wall. Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. See, when you're walking the path that God has asked you to walk, you can do it with confidence and strength because God has promised he's going to be wherever you go. But see, what makes this so cool to me, and that's why it's on my wall, is that it's a promise, but it's also a command. Isn't it? I mean, God is literally saying, no, be strong, be courageous, for God is with you wherever you go. So we can with confidence know that God has promised it and we can depend on it. It actually reminded me of a story because when it comes to God commanding us to do it, as parents, we don't ask our kids to do something that they're not prepared to do, right? Now, if we ask our kids to do something that they can't do, that would just cause frustration and it would cause failure. It's not what a good parent does. I remember, for example, I was outside, it was about a month ago, about a month and a half, and I've taken down a lot of trees in my yard. I had a bunch of stumps. You know, the stumps, they rot. So I'm outside with an axe. I'm basically just hacking away at one of the stumps, trying to chop it up. My daughter was outside with me. And so we're chopping, and I literally walked over and handed her the axe. But I didn't just hand her the axe and leave. I then walked up, showed her how to do it, modeled it for her, let her take a swing or two, stopped her, then again, showed her how to do it. And that's what God does. God's not going to ask you to do things that you're not prepared to do. God's not going to allow you to walk through things that he has not given you the power and the strength. And look, if he wants you to be courageous in doing it, what he means is that you shouldn't have to fear doing it. So when God says, I'm going to be with you wherever you go, that means he's going to give you what's necessary in order to accomplish what God's going to ask you to do. Second promise, God promised to never leave me or forsake me. That's Deuteronomy 31, verse 6. Deuteronomy 31, verse 6 says, be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. So again, we're told to be strong and courageous, but see, this time it's not just because God's with us, but it's because we don't have to fear him leaving us. Have you noticed in your life that many people will start the journey with you, but when something else comes up, in their mind something better comes up, they leave. They're gone. But see, with God, we can be strong and courageous because we know that he won't leave us. It's the promise of his presence that allows us to accomplish things that without, we never could. Which brings me to my last promise. God promised to be with me even when things are difficult. Even when things are difficult. Psalms 23, verse 4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. So we know that. We know that God promises to be with us. He promises never to leave us. But I like here because it has the added emphasis of even when it's hard, even when it's difficult, God's not going to leave you. Look, let's be honest. We have people in our life that say they're going to be with us, but as soon as things get tough, they're gone. They leave us. But see, we know that we have a God who not only has modeled that he never will leave us, he did that on the cross. So no matter how hard things got, Jesus stays to the end. So we can have the courage and the strength to go forward knowing that God won't leave us. Now, it's interesting, though, because once we understand the fact that God promised, you have the other side, which is I promise. What we'll learn is that when we really are able to walk in the fact of what God's promised us, we then can in turn reflect that back to God. Here, I'll show you what I mean. See, I promise to go wherever God goes. See, because God promised he would never, you know, he's going to be with me wherever I go. Well, since God's going to give me the strength and the courage, because God's going to direct my paths, God's going to give me, you know, the marching orders. So God promises never to leave me. Well, I in turn flip that promise and say, well, God, I'll never leave you. I'll follow you wherever you go. Number two, see, I promise to never leave or forsake God. See, God made the promise to us, right, that he was never going to leave us or forsake us. I can commit the same thing to God. So no matter how inconvenient, how uncomfortable, or how unfair it may seem, I will never leave or forsake my Father in heaven. And third, I promise to stay God even when things are difficult. Now see, this is the hard one though, right? Because it's easy to say that I will never leave God when things are good, right? When God's answering your prayers. You know, when you're on the top of the mountain and everything is perfect, no one's going to leave there, right? Because God's, in your mind, God's kind of doing whatever you want him to do. But what happens when you're down in the valley? Well, what the Bible kind of describes, the valley of the shadow of death. Well, God has proven that we don't have to fear evil because he's with us. So we in turn can make that same promise and commitment to God. God, you've promised that no matter what I walk through, you will never leave me. So God, I make the promise to you that no matter what I'm walking through, no matter how hard it gets, I'm with you. Now, let me leave you just with one thought, and I'm going to send you home. What I'm learning is that, look, more than 50% of people today are lonely. They are. Look, they've given up on God. They've given up on friends, family. And what I'm even learning is when you get really lonely, you even give up on yourself. You're alone. You feel trapped. You feel like there's no way of escaping things. How about today? Could you consider becoming the hands and feet of Jesus? Look, just in the same way that Jesus promised to never leave us, how about we look for someone who could be walking through that exact same thing and be that friend to them, to be the hands and feet of Jesus, to find the one who has been rejected or feels alone, or we see them by themselves and we say, you know what? Just in the same way that God promised he'd never leave me, and I've reflected that promise to God, that I'm never going to leave him, I'm going to be like Jesus. And so I'm going to look around and find someone who needs that friend, who needs someone to say, you know what? I'll be there with you. I'll walk with you. Even when things get hard, I'll be there for you. Look, but the reality is, some of you may be saying, but Pastor, that's me. That's me. I'm the lonely one. I'm the one that's by myself. I'm the one that feels isolated. I'm the one that feels trapped. I'm the one that feels like I have no hope for tomorrow. Well, see, we all have reasons why we're lonely, and we all have reasons why we stay lonely. But this morning, I want to give you an opportunity. I want to give you a chance to actually allow God to begin a work in you. I want you to look, and I'm not going to candy coat it. I'm going to give you an opportunity that's a risk. What the risk is that you're willing to allow your family to know where you're at. You know what I've learned? It's really hard to get your needs met if no one knows your needs. Have you noticed that? Have you ever gotten really mad at someone because in their mind they didn't meet your needs, but you never told them? And they're like, dude, you didn't even tell me that you needed that. Yeah, but you should have just known. It's like, what am I, a mind reader now? Like ESP? You know, like, all right, I sense this need inside. Now, look, does the Holy Spirit sometimes give us the ability to sense when something's going on in people's lives? Yes, he does. But I'm telling you, if you want to allow God to meet your needs, you do that by letting the family know what your needs are. So today, what I want to do is to give you an opportunity to allow your family to help. Would you stand with me? I want to pray. Now, to some of you, you're probably already getting scared. Or in your mind, you're like, you're starting like your automatic car starters. You know, you get that going because we don't like this. But I want to give you an opportunity to allow God to bring healing into your life. Look, Christmas, I've learned, can be one of the most loneliest times for some people. And it's not because you don't have people around you. It's you feel alone. You feel isolated. You feel like people don't understand. You feel like no one really cares. That's not true. That's not the family of God is supposed to be. And look, my goal for FCA is to get to the point where we're just a family who loves each other and is willing and able and looking for opportunities to reach out and help those that are in need. But I can tell you, you can't help those in need unless you know about the need.